Life First Podcast. Get with it or get forgotten.
Welcome, all you lifers out there. This is the Life First Podcast, where we are serving a life sentence in sports. Today, it is MMA Monday, and of course, your trustees are here, Papa Josh, and with our newest trustee, Mikey Conlin. And of course, he's got to bring the fam in. He's got his boy and our guest today, Eric Shepman. Thank you for stopping by, my man.
Another
MMA nerd. So we were kind of already getting the ball rolling, talking about just some of these fighters and what makes them, you know, some of these fighters so successful, even though people maybe critique the way that they end up being successful, end up getting that win. You mentioned a great point, Joel, and, you know, we were kind of talking about Derek Lewis. So kind of staying maybe, I guess, on that heavyweight path. What do you think, Eric? Because I feel like me and Mikey have talked about it a couple times. And I've seen a lot happening or coming up in conversations in other MMA and podcasts that I watch. What do you think about the heavyweight division? With Stipe being the champ, being out, dealing with COVID, being a firefighter, you know, there's all this talk now about John Jones potentially fighting Francis Ngannou. Mm. And then, of course, you know, DC waiting for Stipe, potentially maybe DC fighting Ngannou. What do you think is the best path for the heavyweight division, which I think me and Mikey have covered? It's kind of a shallow division, even though there's some decent names in there, but I think the top-tier guys that we are looking forward to fighting, it's really like five guys or four guys. What do you think?
So I personally think, depending on what Stipe does, I mean, a lot of guys want him to get stripped. And just to get the ball rolling at heavyweight again, I mean, John Jones going to heavyweight to fight Ngannou would definitely bring a lot of breath of life to that division, 100%. Yeah. I think after that fight would happen, depending on who the winner of that is, if they do strip DC or Stipe,
yeah,
then maybe DC and the winner of that fight could probably fight for it if it was to get vacated by, you know, Stipe.
Yeah. What do you think, Mikey?
If Stipe was to come back, 100% that he needs to fight DC. They need to run that rubber match.
Yeah, there's no avoiding that. And it sucks because it might be DC's last match, and I'm a huge DC fan.
I need him to – I don't think he should fight John again because I personally don't think he has the answer to John.
Yeah, maybe, but who knows?
We'll see how John fights there if he wants to go there.
I think – yeah, it's so weird, right? Because that division is essentially kind of being held hostage by Stipe, which it was – I was watching the weigh-in podcast with Josh Thompson and Big John, and they were kind of talking about the UFC's kind of in a shitty, like, predicament because if DC Stipe fight, if DC ends up winning that belt, it's going to get vacated. He's gonna grab it and do a Cejudo and just dip out, most likely. So then they just lost. So now they have a vacated belt. Now it's a matter of essentially Ngannou is most likely going to be the next one, the runner-up for that title bout. And then who do you really have besides Ngannou to fight besides John Jones? But at this point, would you want John Jones to go up? Or would you want John Jones to defend his belt at 205? Even though 205 is another division that, I mean, besides a Reyes rematch or Santos or, I mean,
So I actually have a question
for you.
I
guess. About that fight. Who do you think?
How did you feel about the Dominic Reyes and John Jones fight?
I thought, honestly, I was kind of conflicted. When I first initially saw it, I was thinking that Reyes did enough, but I thought it was like just squeaking by. I thought honestly, he didn't do anything enough for me to be like, oh yes, that he dominated the fight. He was a clear cut winner. It was a little too muddy. And then when I watched it again, I was like, man, it didn't seem to me that John Jones was ever, I guess, really in danger for me to feel like, yeah, okay, he lost that fight. So I could see why, like, I got into a huge argument with one of my boys because he doesn't really watch MMA like that, which, you know, so I try to be patient. But he was thinking it was like the UFC rigged it and they wanted him to win and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, listen, man, the UFC doesn't control the judges. Like, it's really the Nevada State Commission controls the judges that come into play. And you just, at that point, you got to put him away. If you know somebody, like, most likely, like, whenever someone saw a Mayweather fight, they knew that they were not going to win a decision with Mayweather fighting. 100%. You're just not. You better put him out or you're not going to win that fight. So my biggest thing is, like, if you, unless you have a dominant performance, for instance, Kamaru and Woodley. Kamaru dominated Woodley from the beginning to end. It was clear cut. Usman was the winner. He showed it. He didn't need to kill
him. Garbrandt and Garbrandt and Cruz. That was pretty decisive as well. You know? Same thing with Pettis and RDA.
So you see those, you know, you could see it, man. And it just wasn't that clear cut for me. And for me, it's like, you know, there was a little bit of that bias of like, oh, it's a champion. You have to, you know, maybe they're giving a little bit of favoritism towards John Jones. Okay. It was your job as a challenger to topple this man, to beat the GOAT at this point. You didn't do enough. And I think in all actuality, it would be great for them to – I would like for them to fight again. I think in all actuality, though, John Jones is gonna know he's not – he can't take him for granted. I think it was a little bit of the Gustafson, you could tell. He might have maybe not as had a heart of a training camp as he should have. I think Super Bowl was around that time, so I'm sure he partied and did his
thing with
Super Bowl.
He's wild.
Yeah.
But, you know, who's to say in a rematch, I mean, I don't see, I just see him dominating. I don't see anybody in 205 really beating, you know, besides maybe like a lucky puncher's chance.
I don't think there's a man in the world that can.
I don't, yeah, exactly. I don't think there's a human being on the planet Earth that would
how much they weigh.
Beat John Jones in a fight.
Matter how hard they hit.
The only one that I would say to me interests me would be an Ngannou, because, you know, when he had that layoff for the 2 years, you know, I think he was staying in the heavyweight weight for that whole time, that he was kind of just training and staying in shape. And, you know, people were talking about how heavy he was hitting, how hard he was hitting. And it always interests me. And of course, now that Ngannou has been like this, obviously the new face of the heavyweights, because we see kind of Stipe most likely on his way out. DC is obviously on his way out. Ngannou seems to be the new kind of fresh face of that division. It would be great to see, obviously, you know, John Jones beat him. And I think just John Jones' speed is what will get him over Ngannou, somebody like Ngannou. It's just Ngannou. It's just, man, you just never know with that power. But
with that fight, personally, yeah. So like I said, John Jones cannot be defeated. he is the end boss. Like, I'm telling you, if aliens came down to Earth and was like, give us your greatest warrior, it would be
John Jones. Easy.
John Jones. There's just in fist fighting. I mean, there's guys out there, if you give them a knife or a gun, they could easily kill John.
Hey, but listen, he took down an assailant before, and I don't know if he had a weapon on him. I felt like he might have. But in Jersey, remember right before his fight, I think like a couple of days, he was in Jersey. And he ended up catching like a robber. Huh?
The Lord has given me all the power to stop an assailant. That's who.
That was when he was still faking the funk. That's when he was like trying to be Dr. Jekyll. He was like, no, I'm this nice do-gooder.
That's God-fearing Jones.
413 Jones.
Right? Yeah.
Really quick, boys. Really quick.
Yeah.
My take on the fight, I saw that Jones was walking down Reyes pretty much the whole fight. And every time Reyes was pushing forward, he would throw flurries. And none of them – I saw that they were like – Jones was like this, weaving, and everything was hitting his shoulder. That's what I saw.
Yeah.
And also, and a good comparison between the Reyes and Jones fight and the first Gus and Jones fight, big difference.
Like, for sure.
I would be more controversial about that one, because Jones was hurt and hurt a lot.
Oh, Gus is pretty shy. He showed that he was a top level talent in that division.
And then the last thing about Jones, for me, if the only way you can beat John Jones is by knocking him out, you're not beating him. That's my opinion. And he's had a lot of, like, people forget, but he's fought a lot of heavy hitters. I mean, obviously not Ngannou power, but he would have beat Johnson the same. And Johnson,
you know, he's had arguably the greatest run of any champion because of who he's fought.
Regardless of what Conor says.
For sure.
Regardless of what Conor McGregor says.
Conor's popping off on Twitter. He's making fun of everybody.
So let's move on to that right now, because I think right now I think the heavyweight division, it's so up in the air. I'm curious to see what the UFC ends up doing. if they end up making that Jones fight with Ngannou, it'll be one hell. There's definitely people willing to watch. And what's great is, like, I think Josh Thompson said it best. No one really wants to see Stipe fight, unfortunately. He's similar to like a DJ, a Mighty Mouse, where the viewership, he's just not getting it. He's probably one of the most decorated heavyweights, you know, that yeah. we've had in a long time, but just no one's watching him. It's the same as Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse is one of the best combat athletes at that time, just killing his division, but it was kind of soft, not soft, because obviously those fighters are great, Benavidez and Cejudo, these guys are great, but it was just, it just didn't get the notoriety that the lightweight, the featherweight, the welterweight division, the middleweight division got. It just never got that. So I think if they can't get
they're both good guys.
They are. I mean, they're great fighters. But people want to see DC fight. You know, people still saw the DC Derek Lewis fight even after Derek Lewis had that horrible showing with Ngannou. You know, it people watched. You know,
that was rough to watch, man.
Need him.
Oh, but I guess, you know, to end it, I guess we'll see what they end up doing. Either way, I think we're going to see some of these top guys go at it, because that's the only way that division is going to be.
I'd rather see Izzy and John Jones.
Izzy and John Jones, huh?
I think Izzy needs to defend
on both of them.
I love Izzy. I just think Izzy needs to defend his belt more. I think he wants to.
Yeah, I don't think he has what it takes to take on a John Jones. He has striking credentials, and he definitely has the advantage. But what happens when John Jones starts getting a hold of you, you find out, like, yo, there's so much to worry about.
Yeah. They both have that range, right? I think that's what makes Izzy in the middleweight division so dangerous, is that he's got that great range and the great fight IQ to keep people at that range and to make sure that he utilizes his striking to the best degree. I mean, he's by far probably the best striker in the middleweight division, which has gotten him to the point where he's at.
Got there in the whole UFC.
For sure.
Talking about Izzy?
Yeah, Izzy. Izzy's one of the best kickboxers in the entire UFC.
I'd say him and Conor. People sleep on Conor's skills. Conor's got hella skills, and he's good pretty much everywhere. I just feel that there's a lot of holes.
Yeah, there's just no way in hell he's going to beat Kamaru Usman, dude.
So let's talk about that. You had mentioned to me, Mikey, that you got some guys, you got some insiders talking about Kamaru.
I might have gotten guys.
Conor fighting potentially for 170, for the 170 welterweight championship belt.
That's insane.
I thought the same thing.
What was I up to this morning?
I thought the same thing when you told me. Does anybody here think that, you know, for me, I never thought that Conor going up to 170 was a smart move. I kind of looked at the Cowboy fight as like, oh, you're fighting a guy that was at 155. That's obviously not a big 170, not a big welterweight. And somebody who's kind of a journeyman at this point, you know, love Cowboy and much respect to him, but he's not, I don't think anybody's looking at him to compete or to contend for a championship. It's weird to me, because even Masvidal, who fought at 155 too, I thought Conor was still going to be a little undersized for even Masvidal. Usman to me is just like, I mean, he that dude's a monster.
Yeah.
Of him.
When you seen the Nurmagomedov fight against McGregor, you just think to yourself, what would a guy who's even bigger than that, who has better striking than Khabib,
that's
who has more power. He's yep. If you watch his fight, I just watched the Colby Covington fight two days ago. And when you watch that fight, Kamaru is so sharp. Like, that's the word I describe as his striking. He's just so technically sound, and he looks like he's made of iron in there. Like, you don't hurt him, he hurts you, kind of thing.
And this is a guy with horrible knees. This guy can't run. He can't run on the ground. He has to do water. You know what I'm saying? He has to do water, like, not aerobics, but like water exercises for his knees.
He'll run in a fight, right?
Oh, but when it comes, that's what he saves his knees for. You know, it's for his career. But it's like, you see exactly that. It's crazy because, right, him and Colby had similar fight styles, right? They're both punches and bunches, volume punchers. They might not necessarily – they're not going to put you away maybe. Granted, they both have the power to do so.
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing that separated them was definitely Kamaru had the thunder compared to Colby.
And Colby had
– You can see it. But if you think about, like, if you looked at it on paper, both of them had really great endurance. Both of them, you know, great wrestling. Both of them not known for necessarily striking, just volume punching, putting the pressure. And it was kind of a war of, like, who's going to fold first? And you just started just seeing the wave of Usman just overwhelm, it seemed like, Colby after a while. And especially after he broke his jaw. I mean, you know, some people can fight through that. And others, unfortunately, just can never get that second wind. And so I think
it was just a matter of time after he broke his jaw. That was a time bomb.
For sure. And it's hard for me to see somebody like Connor, who, if he doesn't put him away maybe in the first two rounds, it's going to be a long night for that guy. It's going to be a really, really long night. But you never know. I mean, you know, maybe he surprises people and last past three rounds and actually, you know, maybe puts him away in the fourth and fifth.
That'd be insane.
I don't see Kamaru letting him. Plus, not only that, remember this. Kamaru and Khabib are both managed by Ali.
Oh, yeah.
They're essentially considered brothers. You know? So it's hard for me to think that, like, that he's not going to come, have a conversation with Khabib and be like, hey man, like, do you really like, you want to help me train, I guess, for Connor? Not that he'll need it much, but it's like, I just don't see him being able to get away with trying to get a championship. Now, mind you, I say that, but if he is able to win, if he's able to have a title, he would be the first to do it, right? Three divisions, 145, 155, and then 170.
Yeah.
Much props to him. It's hard for me to say, though, that he would be deserving of that fight, considering he had just beat – the only person he beat at 170 was Cowboy. I would love for him to maybe fight somebody like Colby, where on another level, and then you give maybe Masvidal the Kamaru fight and then go from there. But I don't know. What do you think, Mikey? What were you
– Juan Archuleta is the first person to have three belts as a professional MMA fighter. I think
it was in the UFC.
It was Cage Warriors. No, he's in.
But there's never. I don't think anybody's done it in the UFC, right?
No one's ever going to do it in the UFC.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen for a while.
The main classes to do it would be 35, 45, 55, because there's two big gaps in between the other ones.
I think maybe like a 185er could go to 205 and then get really chunky to be like 220, 225, and might take it.
Canyon A.
Who?
Jared Cannonier.
Yes. Okay.
I love seeing his his heavyweight 205.
Jared is now like super jacked.
I mean, some of these guys too. You notice like when Connor fought Nate, which is another thing to me. His power kind of left him a little bit. I felt like he didn't have that same left hand at. I think he fought Nate the first time at 160. It was like a catchweight at 160, 165, something like that. But I think Nate was fighting at 170 at the time, and then he replaced whoever Connor was supposed to fight in that event. And so they kind of had like a catchweight at 160.
It was supposed to be Dos Anjos.
Dos Anjos, yes, we talked about that. And I don't know. It just – you could – for me, it looked like he didn't have the same amount of power when he went up in weight than when he was at 145 or 155.
Well – I think personally a lot of what has to do with Conor McGregor's success isn't power, dude. It's accuracy. Like, he is probably one of the most accurate strikers ever to step foot in the cage. And I think with the Nate Diaz fight, he just fought a man who's just naturally like almost twice his size, 6'1". Nate Diaz not cutting weight is a really, really big dude. He's like 190. Yeah. And not only that, he's super tough. He has incredible boxing, so he's really good at rolling punches. People don't even – like, you're not supposed to really block too much in MMA because you get cracked that way. When you roll with punches and it just causes just little minor damage, cut him up a little bit, but he was rolling all of Conor's punches, and he did really well against Conor, man. That's a good style to beat Conor because he has the ground to do it, and he has the striking to actually contend.
You're right.
And then he rocked Conor in the first fight. I'll never forget that and what that felt to watch. I thought he was going to merge.
Yeah. Well, and Connor tried to play it off like he wasn't hurt. I just watched it, I think, today or last night, where he tried to play it off like he wasn't hurt. He's like, whatever. He tried. He gave him like one of these, like, I'm okay. And then he kept hitting him with that jab. He's like, oh, shit, hold on. Wait a goddamn minute. I'm going to try to take you down, bro. You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah. That was a bad mistake. But, I mean, what else was he going to do? Just get punched more?
No, yeah. Desperate times call for desperate measures, right?
Yeah, because he got mounted right after that. He got his back taken, got smashed up, got choked out.
I think I felt like, a part of me felt like when I watched it again, that he gave up his back so he wouldn't have gotten just teed off on in the mount. I felt like he was like, I'd rather get choked out than just this dude just smash me in the mount position right now.
Well, I wouldn't be able to tell you, but Mikey probably could.
Right.
So how does that feel when you're on the bottom and you're getting teed off on and it doesn't feel that good? Do you sometimes think like, hey, just give the guy a neck?
That was his way out. Think about Rockhold Weidman. That's how brutal it was. There was a lot of time left in that round. There was like 2 minutes left. And you're rocked and you have a black belt on top of you. And he's longer than you, so he can like go around your arms through your guard if he wanted to elbow you. It could have been really bad. Connor, Connor's excellent majority of the time. When he's bad, he's bad. He chooses an easy way out, minimal damage.
I get it. I mean, I guess it's somewhat – you got to be smart about your career, I guess, when it comes to a combat sport where every hit can – you know, I mean, you see guys like Tony, guys like even Gaethje in the past, and Anthony Smith most recently, where you're just like, you know that fight took something out of him. Like, there's no way.
You definitely lose some of your life.
For sure.
Some fighters, it definitely takes a few years off. Like Ferguson, he probably shed like 2-3 fights off his career, 10 years off of his life total.
Probably even a big example of that. But see, there is times where you can go through a war, but then if you give yourself the right amount of time off, you can come back and still have that in you. Like if you look at Stipe, after Stipe fought Ngannou, his chin was brittle and he went against DC and got cracked quick, but then he takes I don't know how much time off, rematches him, and his chin is like iron in that fight. If you watch it, Stipe gets cracked with some good shots in that fight, man. That was a good fight.
Yeah. From DC.
Now granted though, that break he took, I don't think was Stipe didn't want that break. If it wasn't for the fact that there was a threat of Brock fighting, because remember after he lost, which kind of sucked for Stipe. Stipe was put on the wings after it was announced that Brock was going to fight DC, which you would have thought, you know, the kind of the idea, I believe, that people have thought was that if you were an established champ that had defended your belt numerous times, that was kind of an elite champ, that if you lose your belt, depending on the fashion, obviously, but that you should have the right to a rematch, right? We've seen it happen with other fighters, and then we've seen the fighters that maybe didn't get along with the UFC that great, like a Woodley, like Stipe, where other fights were more exciting than watching their fight again. And people were more than willing to give Brock Lesnar, who still had to deal with USADA, who we all know was on the good, and had to deal with that whole USADA pool. And Stipe was left kind of like, fuck, well, I'm not going to get my rematch then?
Yeah.
And luckily, I think you're right. I think that time, though, gave him a lot of time to prepare. So, but also a lot of time just heal up and
recovery.
DC and recover, for sure.
Recovery. You have to think, like, DC, how much – damage did DC take from that John Jones 2 fight?
Oh God.
I think mentally more so than anything.
Like to get kicked that hard obviously gave him a concussion. But then how methodical he was to trip him, and then he landed at least, I think I counted 11 unanswered strikes to like the side of the head when he's already unconscious. That has to just ping away at you. And he's 40 years old now. So I'm thinking this. So the DC Ngannou fight to me used to just be as easy as like DC could just out wrestle him and beat him. But Ngannou has shown to be so unorthodox in how he strikes that even really good strikers like Jairzinho had no idea what to do. Strikers like Alistair Overeem, who are some of the most decorated strikers ever, they don't know what to do because this guy's coming in unorthodox, wild, and with bad intentions. And I think DC is going to be one of those guys who's super used to being a traditional fighter, super, like, orthodox. And if he doesn't get a single leg on him, if he doesn't get close to him, because you don't even really want to get close to him. You don't want to get close to him. Look what happened when Cain Velasquez, his partner, his training partner, shot in on him. A lot of people thought that Cain Velasquez hurt his knee.
He blew out his knee, yeah.
He got cracked.
He got cracked. He got dropped quick. And it, but, yeah, but
the follow-up strikes KO'd him.
Yep. Now, mind you, though, that camera angle is weird. So I think that's why people maybe just initially were like, oh, no, his knee must have just gave out. But his knee gave out because he got dropped. He got,
yeah,
his got body went flash knockout, and then he just got finished after that.
And then he also finished Junior Dos Santos, who used to be probably the best heavyweight in my mind before Cain. So, and he even beat Cain. So I used to think those two were the best of the best. And this guy comes and knocks them both out within a minute.
That was somebody, speaking of JDS, that after his fight with Cain, he seemed like he wasn't the same ever since after that.
He got slaughtered. For someone to – it's crazy. So they fought three times. That's a true trilogy. But to KO
– 10 rounds, yeah.
Yeah, to KO someone in less than a minute and then come back and get your ass whooped and then have it even worse the third time.
Yeah.
That's like – it was like 9 straight rounds of just brutality.
But you don't have any answers. But going back to the DC and Ngannou, I mean, I think that's always been, for the most part, kind of DC's strategy, right? Because a lot of these fighters in heavyweight are bigger than him. They're just naturally taller than him and have and usually have a longer reach. And his dirty boxing and obviously his wrestling has been kind of what's made him so successful. I mean, shit, he won the, what was it, the Grand Prix in Strikeforce, right? To become the heavyweight champ.
Yeah. I've never watched him.
I mean, it's crazy because Ngannou, most recently, right, he kind of just threw, like, caution to the wind when he knocked him out. He just started – he was just like, fuck this. Like, it seemed like he kind of just didn't respect his power. He was like, all right, I'm not going to get caught with this guy. I've gotten hit pretty hard. Stipe hits pretty fucking hard. Alistair, again, another great striker. Kane's another great shot. I'm pretty sure I can eat this guy's shots. And I remember watching the replay when he starts swinging, bro, those fucking cleaners, and he's barely missing them, just barely. I'm like, this guy was it was only a matter of time before he got caught by the Grim Reaper because he was barely dodging these shots. And at one point, you can only back up so far. He didn't move side to side at all. He just went straight back. And sure enough, he made it essentially kind of easy for Ngannou. Now, it's easier said than done to say that you're going to move side to side, but then when you see this, you know, Cameroon street fighter coming after you, you're just like, fuck out.
So I always thought, like, I watched the Black Panther. I thought when he took off his mask, it was going to be Francis Ngannou, dude. I swear.
Bro, like, he should be in the next – Disney can make that happen. He should be in the next Black Panther, bro.
His build, like, the man's a savage.
He's an Adonis, bro.
What's so impressive about him is to lose to Stipe in the way that he did. Like, that was a fight to just kind of break your confidence, and it kind of showed in his fight after.
It did, yeah.
And after that, people really turned their backs on him. Even the UFC kind of, like, stopped showing him the attention he was getting, and then he just stole all of that light back, and he's just gone on a murderer's row. 4 first-round KOs. Like, this man is up there. He should be in the talks. Like, I know John Jones is coming up, and respect to the GOAT, but yeah, he needs to fight Stipe again if DC's not going to. But Stipe needs to fight DC. It's so weird. The heavyweight division is such
I'm telling you, man, that's why I mentioned it earlier. It's such, the UFC has this enigma, like, has this, like, problem that they have to solve. They have to figure it out one way or another because there's these – you know, Stipe and DC in particular are on their way out. And it's such a shitty situation for them to be in.
I don't know if Stipe is as much as DC is. Because Stipe, I know he's in on and off with the fire department. Well,
I'm sorry. I'm not saying Stipe. So this is the difference. DC is going to do it willingly. Stipe, I think, is just going to get fucked by the UFC. I think Stipe, for him, unfortunately, it's going to be a thing of if he loses to DC, maybe I think the only other match to really give Stipe would be Ngannou. But Ngannou most likely, if let's say Stipe and DC fight, right? DC ends up winning, and most likely, let's say he vacates the belt unless UFC makes it interesting enough financially for him to fight John Jones again. I don't think that'd be a good fight, but I think if you're a fighter who's going to make a good amount of money, you might just say, fuck it. But let's say he vacates. Well, obviously, Ngannou's going to be the number one guy to fight for that belt. It can't be Stipe because he just lost, right? You can maybe throw in a John Jones for the sake of name. It's going to be a draw. But besides John Jones, Blachowicz is maybe the only other guy that would be credible enough to potentially – or not Blachowicz, I'm sorry, because that's light heavyweight. Fuck, who was I thinking of?
Volkov.
Alexander Volkov?
Volkov, I guess. You're right. I guess that's the only
– No, I mean, you have to think of Ben Rothwell just won last weekend. Alistair Overeem's actually won, I think, three or four.
He looked good. I liked him. I liked
And if Overeem's won four in a row, so if he's going to fight – I know he already lost Rothwell, but, I mean, this is a new – I'm so impressed by him, man.
Rothwell?
Overeem?
No, Alistair Overeem, man. I'm so impressed by him just for the fact of where his career was, how he was, like, finished all those times, and then Greg Jackson just implemented just a completely different game plan where he really doesn't take a lot of damage anymore.
And then that freak punch by Jairzinho. No, he's not on a four-fight win streak. He just lost to Jairzinho.
No, he just won this last week then.
Yeah, but the one before that.
So it wasn't in
a row. No, he lost. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's won, like, whatever. But I think I'm just impressed by him just because of that, you know? And that Jairzinho fight, that was a war. That wasn't a quick knockout.
No, it was like round five.
And granted, I think his biggest thing is, though, if you've noticed, though, he's taking some damn – he keeps getting caught in these moments that – I think with Harris, he fought a guy who, similar to Smith, right? A guy that had him hurt and just gassed himself out trying to finish. And just, you could tell the veteran, you could see the guy who had the experience say, I can try to weather this. Now,
100%. He had more weapons. He had the ground.
For sure. It's hard for me to see. So even out of all those fights, right? None of them perked me up to want to watch Ngannou fight any of them. Besides maybe Stipe, I would love for Stipe to fight Ngannou, but at that point, I knew why the UFC would say, well, he lost to DC, he lost his belt. Why would we give him another opportunity to fight for the belt against Ngannou? So it would end up being somebody like maybe a Rothwell or
it's really shallow.
You know what I'm saying? So it sucks, man. I mean, I hope that they can figure it out for our sake because I want to be able to see
they really wanted to push Walt Harris as like the next big star. You could tell they really wanted to.
He had a great story too, you know. I mean, it's obviously tragic, but for him to overcome this and you felt for him, man. Fuck, man, when he lost that fight, I mean, you really — it sucked because I was so torn, right? I was like, I didn't want to see Overeem get fucked up again.
UFC set that fight up. They're like, yo, listen, Walt Harris is athletic. He has power. He has speed. So let's put him up against this veteran who kind of gets knocked out by all the new younger guys.
For sure. For sure.
That's what they did. Veteran came out on top.
Listen, the UFC, who was it? I think Big John said it on his podcast. The UFC knows how to set up some of these fighters that are on their way out. Wow. Paige Van Zandt hasn't re-signed her contract, but she's fighting Ribas. That's not an easy fight for her. You could tell some of these guys, even who was the last one? Oh my god. Some of these guys when they don't —
How about Cowboy Cerrone? How about Cowboy has fought probably more names than a majority of the people that we can name. Like, he has fought killers his entire career.
For sure. Look at Michael Johnson in lightweight. Michael Johnson, you know, I was rewatching his him and Gaethje, the press conference that they had, and one of the reporters was like, you know, do you feel like you're a gatekeeper for the 155 division? He's like, no, I'm no gatekeeper. I'm gonna contend for a belt. I'm blah 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 blah. I'm coming back bigger and better. But some of these guys, that's just unfortunately kind of the path that they were, you know. Obviously, some of it's in their own hands because they had to win certain fights that they didn't win. But some of that's obviously the UFC saying, listen, man, we gave you some opportunities at this point. If you want to stay on the roster, you're going to have to fight these guys. And they keep giving these guys these killers.
Thankfully, there is other opportunities besides the UFC to show your talent. I don't know how big you are into it, but, like, big example, look at my man Ryan Bader.
He goes
becomes the dual-weight champ. He's, like, their all-star. And guess what? He was known as the gatekeeper of 205. You beat him, you fight the champion. You fight John Jones. And John Jones actually beat him to fight Shogun. Yep. So, I love Bellator, man.
Bellator's got some great fights, man. Bellator's got some great fights. You're right. And now, luckily, now there is, and you've seen it already. Chris left. You know, some of these people have already gone on to make careers. I wish that, you know, you saw a little bit some of these, like in 1FC when Sage Northcutt went over there, and they put him. I mean, they did not give him any like gimme fights. They gave DJ
Cosmo Alexandra.
Yes. Ruined.
If you're an MMA fan, they know how dangerous that person
is. Why would you even want to fight that guy? That guy kills people. No, there's no, like, oh my God. And what he did to him, I mean, I haven't heard, and granted, I don't follow Bellator as much, I'm sorry, 1FC as much, but I don't think, has there been any talks about Sage fighting anybody else? Has he fought anybody else since then?
He's still in the hospital.
He might be, honestly.
he's still on the floor.
but that goes to show kind of the credibility that UFC has, where at 1FC, when Eddie Alvarez went over there, when DJ went over there, and when Sage went over there, they did not give him gimme fights. They were like, all right, you're supposed to be one of the best. You're going to fight some of our best. Yeah. And DJ had some tough fights, but it goes to show the championship caliber fighter that he was and that he still is. And he was able to overcome those fights. Eddie Alvarez, I think two times he fought, two times he got knocked out, unfortunately.
Well, he's also – he's had, like, one of the craziest careers, man. If you watch Eddie Alvarez's career, he's a dog, man. He is a true veteran. And
for sure. I think he's just gone through some of those wars that chin-wise, it's just
– and he can't some of these shots that he used to. Class. He was in a weight class. He was, like, 5'8" at 155.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. You fought Cowboy Cerrone. Like, if you watch that fight, his leg got chewed to pieces. Like, he could barely even touch him. So it's like – maybe he could even fought 145, but then you see his build and you're like, that dude probably can't make 145. How does he make 155?
Might be rough. Might be real rough.
He's a brick shithouse.
I guess let's talk about kind of the card that's most recent, right? We got this fight night. You know, the main event is going to be Woodley versus Burns. And it was crazy because, you know, shout out to Alon. We were hoping to have him for this podcast. Hopefully we'll get him for one of the next ones, but I wanted to really ask him, and I guess I'll ask you, Mikey, because I feel like you've had your opponent switched out kind of last minute, correct?
Yeah. It's happened a few times, actually.
Right? What is it, you know, obviously Woodley was going to be fighting Leon Edwards, kind of, you know, the pandemic happened, so obviously that got changed. Leon stuck on his island in England and hasn't been able to make it out. Obviously even Fight Island wasn't an option for him. Because I think that would have been Woodley Leon would have been the fight if that was the case. What changes, you know, seeing kind of what happened with Gaethje and Tony as well. When it comes to you knowing your opponent changed, obviously if you're, you know, like in Tony's case, he was going to be fighting a grappler. It changed to a striker. When that changes, how much of your strategy realistically can you change? Depending on their style with the short amount of time that you have, or is it something where you're like, you really try to change your strategy, or is it where you just say, hey, I think we're going to kind of just use the strategy that we had in like, obviously I would think that it's going to change depending on the opponent, but Eddie Bravo said it when Tony and Gaethje got booked, that they really didn't change their game plan as much for that fight, that they figured they were just going to keep it standing. And that was kind of it. And that's why Eddie Bravo wasn't really the focal point of that training camp. It was really his striking coaches. What do you say? What do you say about that strategy-wise? What changes for you when your opponent changes?
I mean, it depends on the fighter. I've noticed that a lot of fighters, including myself, it's even at the amateur circuit, like if there's things outside – that aren't clicking as well as your training camp, it'll show in your performance and then your weight cut and it's in your mental. I'd like to think a lot of fighters apply their style to a lot of different fighters. So, like, if I had an opponent change, it'd be like, it doesn't matter. I'm still going to do whatever I want to do. Their style doesn't matter. It's my game plan. It's my will over theirs. And that's how I like to try to carry myself, and imagine other people do too. I don't think the short notice really changes anything, because we've seen a lot of short notice wins as opposed to losses. And then people will use the short notice as an excuse. At the end of the day, you're fighting another person. It's going to be skill versus skill, maybe size versus size and cardio. But there shouldn't be too much of a game plan. Maybe at the highest level, I don't know how that works yet, but maybe it's a little bit harder than just at the amateur scene. Because at the amateur scene, I'm fighting people who are just strikers, just wrestlers. And in the high-level MMA, everyone's good at everything. So yeah, they should be, at least. And even then, there's a lot of holes in the highest level.
So Eric, with this Woodley Burns fight, right? I was looking at some of Burns. Obviously, I think he's on a 4-fight win streak. But the latest name that he really beat was Damian Maya. Other than that, I mean, he's fought some good people, but it wasn't, I think, unfortunately, another gatekeeper, right? Damian Maya seems to be the gatekeeper for her.
Maya is one of my fighters of all time, man. Right? Don't laugh at me.
But what do you think of this fight? Does it do you think with Wood, because I felt like Woodley Leon was a great fight for both of them, right? I think if Woodley has a great performance against Leon, who's a really tough fighter, who's really making his path for the welterweight division, I thought it was going to propel him potentially back to fighting Usman, give him another shot. I don't know. Is it me, or I feel like him beating Burns doesn't necessarily move the needle for him to get that title bout again. You know, is that just me, or do you think, or is there something more than maybe, is there something maybe I'm missing?
Depends who shows up. Okay. So if Woodley is still gun shy, if Woodley still fights moving backwards and doesn't really push, you know, that's usually his style. He lulls people to sleep and cracks them late. But with Burns is crafty. Burns has speed. Burns has technique. And if you just move backwards against him, he's just going to pick you apart. Do I think he's going to knock out Woodley? Probably not. Do I see Woodley knocking him out potentially?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. And I mean, we've all seen Woodley, his grappling. If you don't know, his first like 5 fights in Strikeforce were all by submissions. He is really good on the ground, vicious ground and pound. But Burns is on a hot streak, and I think potentially it could be Burns winning a decision.
Heard. Mikey, what do you think?
I feel like because a lot of people don't know this, but I think he's on, 4 straight wins, finishing a lot of the fighters he's fighting. I think he just beat Gunnar Nelson as well. He beat a newcomer, Mike Davis, who I've trained with very high level. But when it comes to Gilbert Burns, he can crack, he can box, and he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So, like, Damian, who's, a specialist, had his back. He got out of all of it and then imposed his will. A lot of people don't know that Gilbert Burns has been competing in boxing, I think boxing, and he's been doing a lot of jiu-jitsu super fights in between fights. He's trying to become the next Cowboy. Gold
gloves, by the way, Burns, or no?
What was that?
Did he get golden gloves, Burns? Okay.
I'd have to look up.
I got to see who I was reading up on.
Quote me on it, but I just know that he's been staying very, very active in competition. Yeah. That can be, riding that momentum. Bad for Woodley, who hasn't.
And it's impressive to do that to Damian Maya. Damian Maya might not have the best striking offensively, but I mean, he's been cracked a couple times, but I think he's only been knocked out twice before that in his like almost 40 something fight career. This guy.
That guy's crazy. The guy's crazy.
Yeah.
And he showed respect to Damian Maya.
For sure. You got to, man. I mean, fuck, man. That guy's been doing it for a hot second. And he's still competing at a high level, man.
Three title fights?
I think so, yeah. Right? He fought Anderson for a title. He fought Woodley for a title. And
was it only 2? Was it 3?
He didn't fight Anderson twice, right? He fought Did he fight who was the champ before? No, he didn't fight Rich Franklin. I was going to say, who's the champ before Anderson? Who was Rich Franklin?
Hey, Rich Franklin's my favorite fighter of all time.
Hey, okay? I love Rich Franklin. My man looked like Jim Carrey, who was the most humble dude in a sport that was that didn't have too many humble people at that time.
And Mikey roasts me about it all the time.
No, I think we talked about that too. I loved Rich Franklin. I thought it was funny. I was telling him, my buddy, one of my good friends in the group that I used to be in a singing group, but that's, I digress. And one of his good friends growing up, he was a consultant for a lot of these martial arts school, or a lot of gyms in general. He helped like Chuck Liddell. He was helping Matt Hughes with his gym. All these people. So he would have all these fights at his house, and we'd watch at his place. And so I remember when Anderson Silva was fighting Lieben. We were watching that fight, and he was like, he was talking about how if he knocks out Lieben, he's gonna end up getting a title fight. And we were like, oh damn, that's crazy. He's like, yeah, a lot of people are upset, obviously, because it's only one fight and he's gonna get a shot. But a lot of, you know, I think a lot more people were scared of the fact that if he did become champion, no one was gonna dethrone him because he was just ahead of his time at that point in the UFC. And I remember once we saw when the Rich Franklin got booked, I was like, oh shit. And his name is Mike. I remember just like seeing Mike when we went to over his house for the fight, and he was like, man, this is gonna be a long night for Rich, if anything. I was like, oh, okay. And sure enough, it was a long night, but it was a rough one. It was a short, rough one for him, man.
Yeah. See, with that whole thing, like, I love Rich Franklin, he's my favorite fighter of all time. But a majority of the talent in MMA at that time, around the 2005 era, was in Pride, in Japan. And you noticed as soon as around 2006, 2007, when Pride got bought out, you saw just champions emerge left and right and contenders. And you noticed Anderson was one of them. Anderson was fighting in Pride right before that. Mm-hmm. He knocked out Carlos Newton with a flying knee in Pride. He got Carlos Newton, the guy who fought Matt Hughes.
Yeah, I remember seeing, and I don't know, I think this was like, this wasn't in Pride. It was another organization. Whichever one it was the one where he hit him with he hit the dude with an upward elbow.
That was in Cage Warriors. I forgot who he fought.
Yep, and he hit him with this elbow. I was like, oh my God. This is who Rich Franklin's fighting?
He was part of that Fox Academy, man.
Hey, heel hook.
What a real man.
Yep.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, Damian, going back. So Damian Maia, he's definitely faced some of the best, continues to do so. With Burns, I mean, it's funny, right? I keep going for the guys. I'm kind of a homer when it comes to like some of these guys that I just have been watching for such a long time that I hate to see them get dethroned. Like, you know, the Woodley Usman fight. At that point, I think Till was the last fight he had before Usman, right?
Yeah.
He put him away. And I was like, man, it's going to be a war. And it just was not that. It was very one-sided. And it kind of like
you see that if Colby was to fight him, it probably would have gone the same way.
Oh, for sure. At that time, if he would have fought like that against Colby, he would have gone dominated. For sure. It would have been the same thing. You're right.
Oh, for sure.
Same thing. So I'm hoping that was a wake-up call for him to kind of, I mean, you know.
He just fights like that, man. That's his style.
Yeah, but I mean, but even then, like, you could see, like, with him, and granted, I guess it's always about the style, right? With Wonder Boy, it was somebody who was known for kind of counterpunching. So it was kind of weird because they were both, like, two guys kind of feeling each other out. Not one wanted to push space. And then eventually I think Wonderboy realized he's got to kind of move forward a little bit on him if he's going to have any sort of success. And it just didn't work out for him. And Woodley, I think in the first fight, ended up hurting him because both fights. But I feel like in the first one, he had him really hurt, no?
In the round.
Right? And
made him cross-eyed for a second.
I don't know. I'm hoping that Woodley.
Rashad.
Hopefully Woodley has a good showing.
I just
but you're right. I mean, Burns really has the momentum on his
18-3 and 5 straight. His last loss was a KO to Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker's good, man.
Dan Hooker's savage.
Fighting Dustin Poirier next.
No. Did you hear who? No, I'll tell you who he's going to be fighting. I heard on one of the podcast on the weigh-in podcast with Big John and Josh, where they're saying Poirier and Hooker.
It's already confirmed.
Is it? What, Masvidal?
Yeah. No, Poirier Hooker.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Masvidal for a second. I was like, oh, what?
That's going to be a good fight.
Who do you got?
Poirier.
You got Poirier?
Yeah. I'm kind of leaning more Poirier.
So I'm thinking, I know that he lost to Barboza, Hooker. But I mean, that was a war. And Barboza still has some of the sleekest, sharpest striking in the division. But
his kicks are stupid.
Huh?
Not in that division anymore.
Who?
Barboza.
He fought Hooker, though.
Yeah, but he's in featherweight now.
I know that. That just happened. I'm just saying.
In
that fight, you notice that, like, against a guy who has even sharper striking than him, it was hurting him. And Poirier has very slick, sharp striking, but he doesn't use his kicks too much. I know he hurt, I think, Charles Oliveira when he first moved up to 55 with a body kick, I think. But other than that, he doesn't really use him like that.
Hooker's training with Izzy. So he's, I know. A lot of good angles representing New Zealand.
It's definitely a great fight. I'm glad they're keeping the momentum going with some of these main event cards, because obviously that's a main event fight. I mean, unless you can come up with a better fight, that's definitely going to be a co-main event.
I'm not one to downplay a main event, but if I remember correctly, there's this lady fight coming up that's supposed to headline.
Yes, it's the next pay-per-view event, which is Amanda Nunes and Felicia Spencer.
Not that one.
Oh, no.
That one can headline, but there was one that was going to be a fight night headline of two people who, no offense, I don't think are deserving. I'd have to look it up. But I got Amanda Nunes. Yeah, let me look that up. I got Amanda Nunes beating Spencer. Spencer's local to Orlando. Trains in Orlando.
Shout out to her.
Loyal to the city.
It's hard for me to see Nunes losing, but I think if – I don't know. You could see that Nunes in the later rounds – kind of tires out. She kind of slows down a little bit. So if again, it's easier said than done. If Felicia can kind of weather the storm those first two rounds, then she might have the best opportunity to potentially beat her. I just
don't see Amanda Nunes losing to anyone.
Yeah, it's hard.
Cyborg was the biggest, the best chance.
Yeah, like who's beating Cyborg besides Amanda Nunes? Nobody, dude. Like Shevchenko would probably the next best fight, but they're like so separated by two weight classes.
And she's already lost to Nunes twice, even though they're both razor thin, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's rough. I mean, it's unfortunate because you see, you know, it's rough for the women's division, I feel like, because now I guess Ronda Rousey was really the last one that I felt like brought so many viewership towards the women's division, and this isn't taking away anything from like Nunes or even Cyborg, but now that Cyborg's gone, I don't think anybody really sees Nunes losing. So it's kind of like there's nobody threatening that.
I agree with you. I just think Nunes has fought anybody that's anybody. So
no, she has. She's beat everybody. She's beat everybody.
Who else? That's why it almost feels stale. It's just like, who's next? Like, it's just going to be some people who are going to have to rise through the ranks and show that they're really the best, because she's knocked out everybody.
It's become similar to John Jones. The division, I mean, John Jones obviously had a longer career and toppled just some of the biggest names at that time in the division. But it's like you're kind of like stuck. Like, okay, well, there's no up-and-comers that you feel are – going to move the needle, one, but two, that are even at the same skill level of that of the champion. And you're kind of at that point just setting people up to the slaughter that might have a puncher's chance to get a dub, which to me, it's like, I mean, we've seen it right in the past, especially in the times of like Rich Franklin, those early 2000s, when You know, you besides what Randy Couture, I think had a decent amount of defense title defenses. Chuck Liddell had a few.
Chuck had the most before John. He had four. I think Chuck Liddell had four.
But Chuck.
No, I think actually Tito Ortiz had four. He had the record.
Yeah, I thought I was just looking at the record not too long ago. I thought Couture was leading all of them, but granted,
also has a heavyweight belt too.
Yeah, and it actually might have been the heavyweight. It might not have been light heavy. It might have been heavyweight. But at those times, I feel like, you know, if you went on a like 3-fight title defense, it was, you know, you're looking pretty good. Nowadays, though, if you're not doing what GSP, what Woodley, if it's not hitting the 5 tier, it's you're really not. And just not at that level.
It's so difficult to defend a title. Like, I couldn't even imagine, because you have to beat the best guy in the world to win it, and then you have to fight the next best guy in the world every single
constantly,
time.
Constantly.
Just like, that's why GSP's body succumbed to so much atrophy. My man was so stressed out at all times. He had to fight the best of the best, the killers.
Hated it.
Oh, yeah.
So really quick, I just looked up Amanda Nunes' division, because I don't think 145 really counts, to be honest.
Okay. But
the top five are Jermaine Durandamy, Holly Holm. She's ready to beat both of them.
Yep.
Aspen Ladd.
Who?
Aspen Ladd. I've watched her fight like once or twice. Juliana Pena, but when was the last time she fought? Didn't she get like armbarred by Shevchenko?
I think so.
Speaking of Shevchenko, by the way, Shevchenko's sister, I think, is fighting in this card, too.
Really? Five would be Irene Aldana. Yes. Sorry, guys.
No, you're good.
Irene Aldana is nasty.
She is. I mean, yeah, it's rough, man. When your division is kind of like you've gone through the gauntlet of them, you're just kind of like, all right, what's next? So, and for her, it's really like, who is next? Because she's beat everybody at this point.
No, I mean, the next thing for her is honestly just to keep adding numbers to her legacy.
Oh, for sure. But literally, that's all you can do.
Yeah, just fight.
You're not making money.
You have to win every time. And win every time.
Yep. Who else do we have fighting? You got your boy. You said your former training partner, right? Or
one of my old coaches from Tampa's fighting next week.
Wait, what's his last name? Quarantillo.
Quarantillo, yes. Very, very, very skilled. He's 13-2. That's a lot of pro fights. He won his UFC debut. He's fighting Spike Carlisle. Alon just fought Spike. That was a good fight. Spike is a lot better than we thought. And that was a short notice fight for Alon as well. But Spike's good, man. And I'm going to pull up the post. I have nothing against religion or Christianity. I was raised Christianity. Through Christianity, but what
you're
he
about
put,
to get, you're about to get all the Christian groups against you now for no, whatever.
There's nothing against that. What Carlisle put up kind of scares me.
Okay.
Well, here's this picture. This is brand new.
What is that?
Ew.
That's creepy. That's anyway, creepy.
He put up a big Bible quote and then was like, another anointed matchup for me on May 30th in Vegas. I will crucify my flesh to crucify my opponent's demons. About Billy Q.
Okay.
What?
Well, you know, the Alpha, what's his name? Alpha Ginger, I think is his.
Alpha Ginger MMA. Let me zoom in on this bad boy.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I think Alpha Ginger, you know, I guess you have to have some sort of bravado. You know, he's a big fan of the of WWE, from what I heard. So I'm sure he's, you know, he's gonna come up with whatever gimmick or whatever he needs to get some eyeballs on him. Because again, you could be the skilled fighter in the world, if nobody wants to watch your fight, the UFC has shown
DJ,
they won't have you fighting. they won't put you on their cards, or they'll keep you in the prelims or in places where no one's necessarily really watching besides us nerds.
Literally, DJ. And I think it's your fight style, too. I mean, John Fitch is incredible. Still is cut, you know? And just because the way he chooses to fight, people don't care. That's what took Ben Askren so long to get in the UFC as well.
Well, remember GSP was somewhat guilty of that criticism too, where people were like, oh, he's playing it safe. He's not, you know.
But there was a GSP. GSP could sell out a $55,000 or a 55,000 seat arena in Toronto. So
for sure. Well, and I think also GSP leading
up to Conor McGregor.
Well, leading up to GSP's kind of title run, he was putting some people away too. You know, I think somewhat like what Woodley had. I think just GSP obviously had a longer career and did it for a lot longer. So people kind of gave him the, I felt like the benefit of the doubt, like, okay, whatever. He's getting these wins because he's done these things to Matt Hughes, to BJ Penn, to Matt Serra, to all these killers in the division. And then, you know, I mean, he was able to do his thing. So
BJ Penn too.
I think a lot of these fighters know that they can't, it can't be their fighting skills alone. It has to be some sort of.
No. So it's not even. It wasn't even just GSP's fighting skills. I mean, the dude had the look. He had the story. I mean, he was a garbage man. He never wrestled a day in his life, but he became the best wrestler in MMA history. Like, and he also, like I said, had the backing of an entire nation behind him. Like, they loved to watch that man grind out a decision.
They did.
If you watch a GSP fight, my man, the crowd is silent through the whole fight because they're bored. But the last minute of the fight, they are ecstatic.
They're bored.
Like, whoa, this was so awesome! For a decision. It's not just the fighting style. It's everything that you bring to the table.
There was a lot. You're right. There's definitely more than just his skills. But I feel like for sure what had Canada really backing him was the fact that he was able to be successful in that beginning. Because obviously if he wasn't, if it would have been, I think, a long, just boring career run, no one would really, I felt like, paid attention to him. Even though, again, he did have the looks. But, bro, he did some amazing things. When he came back and destroyed Matt Serra after losing his belt, I mean, that kind of kept him going. And then he showed, I mean, what, he fought Nick Diaz, which, you know, obviously.
He won that fight through and through, man.
For sure. But I think people were expecting maybe him to kind of grind it out and just kind of get the dub. And he stood there and he banged a little bit with Nick Diaz, which to me was pretty surprising considering Nick Diaz is known for having that endurance similar to Nate and pushing the pace and just constantly staying in your face.
Diaz has a plethora of TKO wins to his record.
For sure. Nick, oh man, I wish Nick Diaz would have stayed fighting, man. That's one guy.
Yeah.
I blame you
for that.
Right? But so yeah, I mean it's an interesting time to see kind of where
when are we gonna get another one of those? You know what I mean? When are we gonna get another humble martial artist whose only concern is to fight the next best guy, not the money fight? He didn't want to fight him.
Wonder Boy. He's already here.
Wonder Boy?
You don't think
but like
Khabib, you know, you don't think Khabib wants that?
True. I still think he can become champion. I think that Wonder Boy can be.
Khabib's not the most humble guy in the world.
No, but imagine.
I feel like he's Wonder definitely Boy more humble than
Wonder Boy is.
I guess if you're talking about strictly humble, yes, Wonder Boy for sure is probably the most humble fighter that I could think of right now, legit.
Or that, Francis Ngannou.
No, but even he's talked a little bit of shit. I've never heard Wonderboy talk shit.
He knocked out Jairzinho in 20 seconds. They interviewed him. They're like, oh, how'd you feel about the fight? Be careful what you wish for. This man is so soft-spoken.
He is. I think you're right, though. I think the most humble fighter has been Wonderboy. Champion-wise, I mean –
gosh darn it. Here's me getting knocked out right now.
I love that video, bro.
So nice. Nice belt for life. Nice motherfucker belt for life. Probably
like the most humble champion.
Who?
Demetrius Johnson.
Yes. Actually, you're right. He was probably, yeah, you're right.
I don't think that ever got into an altercation in his life.
Nah, bro. Not that I can remember, press conference-wise, even the guys that probably, I'm sure, were talking shit, he was never the one to start any of that shit talking.
He was sponsored by Xbox playing video games. He was the man.
Well, I used to watch him, bro. Because I used to play PUBG heavy. And I'd see him gaming. I'm like, this not him and Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley's another big gamer. And Sean O'Malley actually just got his fight booked, speaking of. Oh, fuck. I can't remember the guy he's fighting, though. But I know he just got his fight booked.
Sean O'Malley's fighting Eddie Weiland.
There you go.
That's one of those fights where they really think that he's going to go in there and just knock out Eddie Weiland.
I'm a Sugar Sean fan for sure. He games, he burns, and he fights.
There you go. GBF, man. GBF. Games, burns, and fights. Who else? Let's see. So, wait, Eric, I'd love to get your perspective on this because me and Mikey have obviously spoken about it. What happens with Tony now? Mm. Now that he's lost, unfortunately, do you think the UFC is going to fuck him, or do you think they're actually going to give him fights?
I don't think they have much of his caliber. I don't think they have much of a choice. So I think Tony Ferguson's going to rebound. I think Tony Ferguson's going to, regardless of what people say to him, to take some time to rest, I think he's going to go through with it. And he's just going to –
crazy.
Yeah, he's a savage. And I think – I feel bad for whoever he has to fight next.
I agree. Now, if you could think of – if you were the matchmaker, who do you think logically – is going to be his best fight, his next fight.
Own it?
Yeah.
Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And that's actually a good fight on paper because there is a chance. I mean, we just saw him take a thrashing from Gaethje, a man who can put out anybody, and he didn't go out. But that's not to say that he won't go out the next time he fights. Very similar to the Stipe.
A lot of damage. And that That last shot he took, where you just—I mean, it gave me goosebumps. When he catches that right, and you just see him like shake his head, like it was almost like him saying no. Even though I think it was—I felt like it was more of him trying to shake it off and just like kind of shaking his head no. But it, you know, that one just really—it looked to me like, man, like that's the shot that
you see with that Conor McGregor fight. Like I said, there is a chance McGregor will be able to catch him now that he is hurt or has been hurt like that. But, man, does that guy have tools. Tony Ferguson can find a way to win in that fight in so many different areas.
But the crazy thing is he won't – so the probably one of the skills that obviously he's – the I feel like one of the best at is his Brazilian jiu-jitsu, his wrestling. But he doesn't really utilize that. It's almost more of a deterrent and a tool that he uses in case he gets taken down, never because he's willing to take somebody down. I think the last time – I think he hadn't taken anybody down like 5 years. And so, you know, obviously most likely he's going to keep it standing, just like what happened with him and Gaethje. I would love to see that fight too. I think what a great card – I don't think they do this, but what a great card to have if you could have Gaethje Khabib, the main event, and then the co-main event is Conor Tony. And whoever wins fights the next person.
That would be just such an incredible event.
Eddie Bravo, this is shout out to Eddie Bravo who put this on JRE during the Fight Companion.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
He had mentioned that, and I was like, you're right. That would be an amazing card. And I think me and Mikey were talking about it, though. If let's say it's not Tony Conor, but if you can get a Khabib Gaethje fight, and then maybe you get a Conor Masvidal fight going,
Conor no one.
I
feel bad because, like, you know, I love Conor McGregor. I think I was watching him since his first fight against Brimage on Facebook. By the way, was I think right. Where his fight went live was on Facebook, and I remember. I was thinking he was just gonna be like the man, and he ended up becoming the man, but I just don't think he's got what it takes anymore, man. Not where he's at. He doesn't have the kind of advantages he had at 45.
The same drive. He's not the same need. He's got a whole whiskey company.
He was really something to behold when he was hungry. And now
we're not here to take part. I'm here to take over.
Man, he was a savage, and now he has stock, and you know he has his own whiskey. And my man's moved on.
I mean, he made close to $100 million, you know, with that Floyd fight, and you know.
And they're thinking about running it again.
Do you think he can knock out Floyd? Come on, man.
Yeah, because Mike Tyson gave him mad props.
He's getting older, so like, if you wait another 5 years, you're gonna knock out Floyd.
Yeah, dude, just
right.
Just
wait. Yeah, sure. Wait till he's geriatric as fuck and then go knock him out.
And Floyd could probably still go in there and throw.
Oh, yeah. He'll roll those punches, man. That Philly shell defense. There's a reason why he's been able to be so successful.
Nearly as much damage as you think he has.
I'm hoping the same, though, for Tony. I think he deserves it. I mean, he went on a 12-fight win streak. You shouldn't – when you have a talent like that, treat him with the respect that he deserves. And you're right. Whoever he fights next, you know, God help you, man. Hopefully, you better be ready because he's fucking – Kui is coming. What other fights here? Dominic, what do you think happens with Dominic now that he lost? Do you think he's going to – obviously, most likely Sterling, Peter Yan, maybe even a Sandoval. What's his
Sanhagen.
Sanhagen.
Corey Sanhagen.
They're probably going to be most likely the front runners for – most likely Yan and Sterling. Do you think now Dominic obviously is going to need to go on a few fights before he can even contend for another title bout?
Just one. I think if Don comes back and beats a top five contender, I mean, he's right there again.
Now, going kind of back to like the Woodley Burns, do you think it depends on the way that he bits? If it's a resounding win, do you think that gets him, or do you think if, let's say, he wins like squeaks one by in a split decision, do you think that still propels him, or do you think he needs to either knock him out or just dominate? Wins
by a squeaky like little decision depends if the next guy in line wins by a squeaky decision, because his name will sell the fight more than another guy
than anybody else.
But if someone else comes through and they win by devastating knockout or a great submission, like, they're gonna be propelled. But Dom has the name, Dom has the resume, and now that 35 has been vacated, I definitely think after one fight, he'll be right there.
I'm assuming you think it was kind of a little short early stoppage with that fight as well?
Yes and no. Like, in a normal fight, that was a good stoppage, but not for a legacy fight, not for
with 20 seconds left.
That is a legacy of legacy fights, man. You got to let that guy go out in his shield.
Yep.
You got to.
Yep.
This isn't a young fighter who's trying to, you know, make a name for himself and he doesn't want to take damage. This is a guy who's put everything on the line for 10 years. He needs to be able to fight through situations because he's a warrior.
I agree. And, you know, I think me and Mikey have both kind of agreed that we thought it was a little bit early stoppage, obviously. But it's hard to argue, I guess, when you look at the facts of, like, getting 12 unanswered shots. But I agree with Dominic. I mean, he was climbing back up the fence. He wasn't getting necessarily chopped down, and there's 20 seconds. I mean, fuck. Give him an opportunity to at least escape.
Well, of course, the shots were unanswered. He was trying to stand up.
He was kind of, yeah, exactly.
If he sat down and shelled up, he would have lost that way. So what do you want him to do, man? What do you want him to do? Do you want him to sit there and take the shots, block, and get it stopped? Or do you want him to get up, get punched because, hey, that's what the other guy's going to do to you.
He has to get up, to get out of that situation.
Yeah, he's going to get hit. But if he's standing up and then he gets dropped again, then he's stopped.
I think it was kind of – and again, and I guess it's harder, right? It's so much harder to – we say this, but we don't get to hear some of these shots. I mean, I think Big John was talking about in his podcast, obviously being a ref himself, just a ridiculous referee himself, that you get to hear – they hear these shots, man. And I guess I would assume that – I think his name is Keith, was the ref.
Keith Peterson
just probably saw that knee catch him. And I mean, it's fucked up what Keith did on Twitter, where he posted a picture, Savage Life himself, of him going cross-eyed, because he went cross-eyed when he caught that knee. And he's falling. It was like, oh, yeah, you were okay. Kind of like, I'm paraphrasing, but kind of like, oh, no, you were okay. You know? So it's rough. I think I'm a huge Cruz fan. I was really excited to see his comeback. I thought honestly, part of me was thinking that Cejudo was going to.
I didn't expect that.
He was looking good with those leg kicks. It was something. I wasn't expecting those leg kicks to
kind of. He had the answer.
But Dominic started. I felt like he was getting that momentum in that second round. I felt like he started getting his rhythm a little bit better. He started timing his shots a little bit better.
But look at that. As soon as he got his rhythm going, he got countered with a knee immediately. So Cejudo just took a little back step and was like, all right, you throw something. Just like against Cody Garbrandt.
Cody, yep.
Like, go forward. He gets caught.
Yep, yep. So, yeah, man, it's a rough one for Dom. I mean, we'll see. I'm curious to see again who's going to be his next opponent. Yeah. And I'm trying to think. Are there any other fight? Obviously, Smith. The biggest controversy with Smith has been, you know, his corner not throwing in the towel.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you think they should have, or do you think? I mean.
Well, shout out to Glover with an incredible game plan, by the way.
Yes.
So, to be able to, he went in there, great head movement. And a lot of people, yeah, Anthony Smith looked sharp, but none of those shots hurt Glover. And there's a reason for that, because he had very good defense. He was rolling a lot of the punches. He was a really good head movement. And then after a while, you know, Anthony Smith got tired because his corner wouldn't shut up. And Glover's a veteran of veterans, man. And if you look at their two skill sets back to back, Glover should not have lost that fight. Glover, who he's trained with, who he's fought, his resume in general is much better than Anthony Smith's. Anthony Smith is just on a streak.
Yep.
Glover is honestly, he's always been one of the best light heavyweights in the world. And I think he did a very masterful game plan, but I do feel bad a little bit for Anthony Smith. Personally, I know that he probably would have wanted it that way anyway.
For sure. I think a lot of fighters do.
Yeah, I think he would have wanted to at least just continue to try to fight until his last breath. But at some point, you have to look after your fighter.
If he's telling you he lost his teeth.
Yeah.
It's.
And he's had like an insane career, like a 13, 14-year career.
Yeah.
And Smith has been fighting forever, dude.
A long time. Mikey, are there any other cards that maybe I'm missing? Trying to think of what other maybe big fights are coming up. I don't think they've really booked anything else. I think Poirier was probably the most recent, right? Poirier Hooker, kind of big name wise. I'm trying to think. I don't know if there's anybody else besides the rumors of like somebody like a Jones fighting in Ghana.
Well, I think like the biggest one right now I saw was like the McGregor and Kamaru Usman.
Jeez, if that happens. Well, I mean, but it isn't booked. That's just rumor wise.
Mike, he's the kind of guy to say McGregor. I swear, right?
Bro. How about John Blackowitz? So just getting like sidelined for Ngannou, like, hey man, but I'm fighting in the weight class that John Jones is at. And they're like, no, bro, you're nobody. Take your Polish ass over there. We're bringing in the Cameroon monster, right?
Like, yeah, we want a monster fight. We want one of those freak show fights. We want to see John fight the biggest dude possible.
Which, hey, you know, another guy who. If John Jones can just go in there and dominate and show that he's the best of all time, as he usually does, man, what else do you have for that guy? If he beats Ngannou, now that I think about it, who else is he going to fight?
Just Stipe.
You know, but even then, I mean, I feel like, I don't know.
I think Stipe's a much harder fight for John than Francis's.
Well, his wrestling is by far better.
Well, Stipe's just an all-round better fighter than Ngannou. Ngannou's got the right hand and left hand of truth, but I mean you got to have more than that to be the best of the best ever, and Stipe has the talent, the tools, the speed, the cardio. He's right up there, man, and he's the only guy I could see like maybe John Jones has a hard time fighting, because Stipe has one of those styles where, I mean, look at the DC fight, man. Look how fast he switched left hook to the body. Let's see if that works.
Yep,
it completely shut DC down.
Oh yeah.
Intelligence, fight intelligence. John Jones has the same thing. If he sees something's going on in the fight, he changes it immediately.
Yes. Oh yeah.
So that's it. And Ngannou's not that kind of fighter. Ngannou isn't good when he's losing.
No, and I mean, granted, he hasn't lost too many times besides really the Stipe fight was kind of the one. I mean, the Derek Lewis one, I feel like it's just a wash because he just – that wasn't Ngannou anymore.
Yeah.
But if he can do similar to like what Izzy does, which is – Izzy doesn't wrestle him, but has amazing takedown defense. If Ngannou can get up to that level of keeping – similar to Connor. Connor had, I feel like, great defense, and which is what kind of kept him – in the game for so long and keeping it striking. If Ngannou can somewhat can develop something like that, then I think he's going to be really, really fucking tough to beat. But can he do that in the amount of time that he's going to need to beat somebody of the caliber of John Jones? I just don't. That's where I don't see it happening. I think eventually he could develop that and be the best heavyweight, but man, I mean, if you're going to have to fight him somewhat recently, that stuff, that takes time to develop. And he's been doing it for a short amount of time. Izzy has been doing it for a long time and has developed that. So it's a great time to watch fights right now, man. Really, really great time to be a fight fan. That's for sure.
100%.
Mikey, what do you got going on? What's going on with you? Your training? When's your next bout? What's the deal? Let the people know.
I'm trying to lose weight, man. I don't know what happened, but I'm in a little bit of pain. I trained on Monday and Tuesday, and I couldn't really train the days following. So my lower back, my right glute, can't figure it out. I didn't let you a deep time. So he said I got to tackle deep past the hand, and then when I'm 170 and I'm in fight shape and I'm back in my training regimen, which has been a long time since I've been in that, then I'll start looking at fights. But for right now, I'm retired.
Eric, fuck out of here. Right now, I'm retired. All right.
Yeah, my man's trying to be a streamer.
Right? You know? Hey, man. Listen, Sean O'Malley does it. Mighty Mouse definitely was doing it. I mean, listen, if you got the fandom, bro, you do what you do. King Mikey.
They're also really famous and then streamed.
Hey, yeah, yeah. But.
Bounced off each other. Something like that.
Hey.
Tomatoes, tomato, bro. Tomatoes, tomato. Hey, Eric, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Bro. I'm sure we're going to be seeing more of you. Mikey, bro, always a pleasure, my man. MMA Mondays of Mikey and Papa Josh here. All you lifers out there, thank you for hanging out. Stay tuned. This is just the beginning. It's episode 2. We got plenty more coming. Peace. Have a good night, everybody. All right.